This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're bringing you four stories about lost and found culinary treasures.
We are searching for what will be lost, and we're trying to rejuvenate it.
What we try to do is collect these sourdoughs that contribute to the biodiversity of sourdough in order to store them, to document them, and be able to preserve them for the future.
It's bringing back the history and just being part of that time that just, there's nothing like it. You know, there's nothing like it.
When fame comes late, I'm sure it's just as sweet as when it comes earlier.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Elena Santigade. My guest today is Kara Warren, the East Coast Sales Manager for Isigny Sainte-Mère. Kara, did I say it right?
You did pretty good.
Okay, I did okay. Yeah. I'll give it a B.
Yeah.
So Kara's career in cheese began in 2005.
Correct.
Okay. And two culminating events this past week prompted me to ask Kara to join me in the studio today. First, the Cheeses of Europe kicked off a unique campaign last week with an interactive beer and fromage event at, surprisingly, Three's Brewery. Beer, people, not wine. It was a full-on launch and so well executed. We'll talk more about that throughout today's show. On the same day, Vice Munchies published an article titled, Meet the Lesbian Cheesemongers of the LGBTQ Community, featuring Kara along with a small group of lesbian and non-binary cheese professionals. The article shed some light on the inclusive, supportive community of lesbians within the cheese industry, and Kara also had some amazing quotes. When asked for her take on the queerest cheese, Kara chose Mimolette with its, quote, fantastic, over-the-top rind and weird shape. I'm excited to learn more about Kara and her journey throughout the cheese industry, and listeners, I hope you are too. Kara, welcome back to Cutting the Curd.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is like the greatest, funnest thing to ever do all the time with you. You know, like
it's true. We're just chat. We're here at Roberta's. And listeners, we are having pizza delivered to the studio mid-show.
Yes.
So you're going to get maybe to hear that happen.
Me being more over the top. Excellent.
So, Kara, 2005, you've been in cheese for a while.
Oh my God. Yeah. It goes fast.
And you're still a spring chicken here. So it's like, it's not like this was career number two or three for you. Tell us a little bit about your early days. How did you get started in cheese?
Yeah. So no one wakes up and says, hey, I'm going to be a cheesemonger today.
I know. I keep waiting to meet that person. It might happen. Future generations.
But I know. The millennials or whatever the generation is called now.
Yeah. I don't even know.
No, I went to City Tech in Brooklyn. I didn't have the grades that like most restaurant people to go on to an Ivy League. So my parents said, you got to stay in the city. You take hospitality management. We're not paying for Johnson & Wales. And they were right. And I think it was learning the ropes there. And then afterwards getting my first job, my dad was like, you like cheese, try out for Murray's. And I was like,
So your dad suggested it.
He saw it somewhere. It could have been like a New York Times classified ad knowing him or something. And he was like, you like mozzarella? I was like, yeah, I do.
Actually.
And so then I sent in an email to them. Sarah Sabrowski interviewed me, and I got the gig, and that's where I first started cheesemongering, and it was like the who's who of cheese people. I mean,
yeah, you came up at a great time.
I was in a good vintage. Yeah, 05 to 07 years.
Oh, yeah, very good.
So, I mean, if you do the name, the shout-outs, I mean, Will Whitlow was a manager. Tim Solomon was a manager. Frankie was running upstairs. Cielo was doing his thing, you know. Liz Thorpe was doing wholesale. You know, Chris Munsey was there, Norris Singh. I mean, there was a whole It's bunch
like a
of people.
Cast of characters who've all gone.
Amy Sisti. Uh-huh. I mean, my God, yeah. I can't. Diane.
Have gone on to do amazing things.
I mean, Giselle Otters. I mean, there's this. Anne Saxelby was leaving just as I was coming in.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like a full circle here.
And at that point, did you have any idea what you were getting into? I mean, when you, if you studied hospitality management, was your expectation that you might go into more hotels, restaurants? Like, what was the kind of trajectory you had in mind?
Totally fair. I had started doing some prep cook stuff in the summer. And
back of a house.
Yeah. I went to Chelsea Piers into the catering, and they gave me like, I don't know how many pounds of lobster to break down.
You were like, maybe not.
And I was like, tamales everywhere. And I was like, I don't think this is for me. And I really like cheese, and I like talking to people. I'm a social animal.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know, I don't want to be hidden in the back there.
Yeah. And just quietly doing a task for 10 hours straight.
And I never felt like the type of person to be that professional server at a 4-star restaurant yet. You know, I didn't have that polish yet. So then like being at a cheese counter and learning all these cool stories and just like loving cheese anyway, like trying every cheese, it stuck with me. And then I was so good at it, I guess I got enough confidence built up with it that I stuck with it. I mean, I went to head of receiving, and then I was an assistant manager at Murray's.
Right.
And then, you know, after a while, there's a little bit of a burnout, so I took a break. But that's when I mean, even at a burnout period, I still did a season at Stinky Brooklyn for Christmas.
like I got to go back for the fourth quarter.
Well, and I needed cheese, and I needed charcuterie, and you know how that is. You know.
Yeah, get a little discount, work some shifts.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think, so in those early years, what caused the burnout?
You know, you're helping customers, and sometimes you know it's bad when you start recommending the same cheeses over and over. You're not feeling
when you like lose your creativity.
Yeah, you don't have like that connection with the person. Like I used to deal with a person where it'd be like a therapist appointment. I would really try to look into their soul and match the cheese they were looking for. I wouldn't just be like, oh, I love this, or this is getting pushed, or whatever. I will admit, I was the worst at the push list. I mean, unless there was a contest for it.
That means you're a customer advocate. If you're bad at the push list, it usually means you're great for the customers.
Exactly. I was like, this is slamming right now. You gotta eat this.
It just came in.
Yeah, it just came in. It's
fresh. We hardly
have
any.
I know. That's basically it. Yeah, I was not the other person. So,
So you found yourself kind of losing the spark a little bit.
Yeah. And I think I needed to learn more. There were more layers to the business that I hadn't experienced yet. Assistant management was short at Murray's before I needed to change up gears anyway. So my next move was Choice Green a few years later.
And that's interesting because so Choice Green no longer...
Not
around,
in business anymore.
Not in business, but Choice Green was a little neighborhood shop, Clinton Hill. Fort Green, I guess.
Yeah, Clinton Hill,
right
Fort
on
Green.
The edge of Clinton
exactly.
Hill, Fort Green. And they had, different from Murray's, they had a little bit of, did they have produce? They did have produce.
They did it all, yeah. They did produce. They had a fish counter. He found a Japanese guy to run he used to work at Blue Ribbon, I think, Ketsu.
I remember they had bulk, like laundry detergent before anybody had that.
Well, it was owned by a French guy. And so he had a lot of European principles. And I will say his sense of woodwork and interior, he was very good at making the place look a certain way and have this certain ambiance.
It looked like a village, almost like a cottage shop.
Totally.
Because, in the middle of Brooklyn.
And it was in a basement, so it had that feeling. Yeah. And then it had this remarkable yard. And then you load in like an ultimate cheese case.
Right.
And it was like actually the best thing ever. It's just in terms of making money and thinking smart about POS and that next level of business.
Right.
It wasn't instituted. There. And it's like, that's the part that's always missing in some of these smaller shops where you're like, oh yeah, fluidity. That means something in a store. I want to move more than 5 customers in a few minutes. All right.
Actual volume of sales and stuff.
Right. You know, so it was so close, but it just,
it was a really charming shop.
Yeah.
And you were the manager there?
I was the GM.
Oh, wow.
I was the first, I feel like I'm like the starter kid in a lot of places. And then I eventually realize I'm not going to be around for this, but I want to grow something else.
I can relate to this.
I was just going
to
say jinx, similar to you. I did my 9 months of time at Choice Green, and then it was a mutual parting. And I decided I'm going to go back to Brooklyn College. I never finished a four-year degree. Huh. I had only done 2 years
at City Tech.
At City Tech.
Cool.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, let me get my life more well-rounded now.
Did you, at that point, going back to school, was cheese on your radar as a more longer term career, or were you thinking of other topics? Like what were you thinking?
I was ready to divorce cheese. I was done. I said, this is it. There's no money in it. My parents had told me there's not enough money in it.
Mm-hmm. Your dad's kicking himself for nudging you.
Yeah. Yeah. He was sweet. Sometimes he'd be like, well, you can open a small shop, but not in New York City.
Like, smart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's typical American Jewish father talks. So yeah, I mean, I went to Brooklyn College for radio and television. Uh-huh. And I was thinking, okay, media, maybe there was a vlog. Who knows? I mean, we're talking 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, things were happening. It's like blogs were happening at that, like in full force.
Yeah.
And podcasts were just starting.
I was ready to switch it up. I was looking for another advantage. So, I did that. I went to a wine store. I totally love cheese. I was like, maybe.
So you worked in wine.
I did. I worked, of all the places, I worked at Sutton Place. Sutton Wine Shop, 57th and 1st.
Whoa.
Which was really interesting because I learned how the wealthy spend their money on
Seriously.
Wine and liquor.
Sutton Place is such an interesting neighborhood. Listeners, for those of you in New York or are able to visit New York at some point, it is worth a little jaunt to go see this tiny, it's like a pocket community over there. It's over the FDR.
Correct.
Right? It's like, it almost like has a hangover of the FDR.
Yes.
It's a two blocks technically, or three, maybe like five blocks.
Yes.
I don't really know. Right on the edge of the Upper East Side, the beginnings of the Upper East Side. Ideal Cheese is right there.
That's correct. Yeah. That was a neighboring cheese shop. I finally learned about that place. It was very cool.
Yeah.
But I think, for me, it was like exposure to another New York City.
Totally.
I mean, it's all doormen. Mm-hmm. Magnums of certain things get delivered every day to these people.
Oh my gosh.
There's the tips for one bottle of wine. One bottle could be like $80 to $100 for this guy on one day, and he'll tip you $10 at the door. For me, I was like, "Oh, this is the life."
You're like I cashed in.
I did a 5-minute walk, and I got a $10 tip. Who needs cheese? No, it was a very interesting window, and even you don't walk through the entrance, you know.
You go through the side door to make a Sutton Place delivery.
You had to go through the service entrance.
Wow.
So when I would walk in, you know, I'm a white lady, Brooklyn Jewish. They didn't say anything sometimes, but after a while, they started to realize
they got wise to
this
you.
Is a delivery girl.
This is a worker.
Holy crap! And then I got told to walk around the side.
Wow.
So then I was put in my place. I was like, oh, okay.
Now was that a community? You know, it's a very different place from the Brooklyn that you grew up in.
Absolutely.
And was it a community that you had any exposure to before then in any way?
You know, slightly. Growing up around New York City, you kind of get whiffs of it.
Yeah, like you go to school with someone who's like
totally
involved.
I went to LaGuardia High School. I went, it's an arts fame high school.
Mm-hmm.
There were daughters of playwrights and certain people. Or different places, you end up going to some kid's house after school and you see,
like,
oh my God, you have heated tiles? What kind of land is this that you live in? Where am I?
Interesting.
Yeah, another side. So that was the wine side. And I actually, that was the best way to learn about wine. I say, everyone's like, how did you learn about wine? Well, I just worked in a shop for 2 years and got to taste it all the time. I think that's the same thing with cheese.
Totally. The exposure to just daily tasting, talking, little tidbits you get to overhear.
Yeah, it's the way you can really, I don't know what the term is exactly, but like memory profile, certain things. Like, and that's why I love being like a foodie taster now. And I think I'm pretty decent at pairings is because I've really memorized the hell out of things.
Right.
And I'll look at some things online, how they should be paired. But I do think it's like, use your intuition, use your memory to do it. Don't just play by those rules.
Well, that takes me to the amazing pairings that you designed for the interactive beer and fromage event at Three's Brewing last week. Kara designed these beer and cheese pairings that were really amazing. The event was at Three's Brewery, but there were six different local brewers whose beers Kara paired with six different French cheeses.
Yeah, it is wild.
It was wild. It was also a very speedy tasting that we did, which had a lot of energy to it, which I enjoyed. My favorite of the pairings was the triple cream and the goza.
Really? The key lime pie flavor,
it tasted
huh?
so much like key lime pie. Ah. Also sort of like a salt bagel, which is not my top bagel choice, but I found it very satisfying in liquid form.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that pairing. It was so refreshing.
I didn't expect that, I'll be honest.
Yeah? You would have pegged me for choosing a different one?
I thought maybe you liked the Mimolet and the Doppelbach.
Now, that was cool.
Because that I thought I heard you talk about that. But that's only reason why I assumed.
That was a close second.
Okay, good.
I think I'm leaning toward the triple cream and goes because I am ready for spring.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that was more of like refreshing.
Hells yes. It's about that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 70 degrees in New York and it was weird, but it was great.
Yeah. Good, people.
Weird good.
How did you learn about beer? Because those pairings each one worked in a major way. There was no dud on that selection. And I'm also curious. So I'm curious how you learned about beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious what your favorite of those pairings was.
Okay. So, I'll start with my favorite.
Okay.
My favorite was shockingly the Bleu de Verne.
With
the Pilsner.
It was delicious.
Because it was like, again, that like light blue, acidic, salty thing going on. And mm-hmm. then with the clash of the Pilsner, I think it was a German style Pilsner too.
Yeah. So it was a little more complex than the everyday Pilsner.
It just hit it right. And it was the end pairing, which after a Mimolet and Doppelbach, I thought would be absurd.
Yeah, I was like, we're not going to taste anything here.
Right, I thought it would be a wash, but then it actually was like a very delicate, swan swimming across a lake type move.
It totally held its own.
I was like, this is amazing. So not to toot my own horn too much, but
I liked it. I'll toot it. I'm tooting it.
yes. And so then how did I learn to try and do these great beer pairings? Well, I think it's actually just from drinking beer. And the week before, I had to write about these things. Mm-hmm. So, and I had a
In preparation class. For the event.
Yeah, and I was doing teaching a class at the French Cheese Board.
Uh-huh.
So instead of doing a wine version, and I switched it to beer, and I bought, no, they weren't the exact beers, but mm-hmm. I mean also, and I've had a few of these beers in between sometimes at other events. I was like, okay, this is going to, I know Finbeck. It's going to be like IPA hoppy.
Right.
And then the KCBC, I had Iceberg Zombie, which is like the best effing name ever for a freaking sour beer, actually. Mm-hmm. This wasn't the Goza, but still, it was that tartness.
Right.
So, like, I think ultimately, like, just again, what I think everyone should do when they do pairings, don't guess it, just like actually taste.
Right. Try to
and,
do
and
it.
And use your imagination. I like to think I have a huge imagination.
Yes. Your creativity was on full display.
I think it's a stereotype of gay people. and I'm living up to it, which is great.
Live up to it.
Yes.
Fly that flag.
I proudly. Yes.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to have to take our break here, but, that's going to bring us in very nicely to talk about this amazing Vice Munchies article in the second half of our show. Listeners, we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin in the USA. Conte is a raw milk, cooked, pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Lisa Held, and I'm the host of The Farm Report here on HRN. The Farm Report is a show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. Expect from-the-field insights as guests explore how producing fresh, delicious food relates to environmental and community sustainability, justice, and better health. You can find The Farm Report wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with Kara Warren of Isigny Sainte Mère. And listeners, you're probably going to notice, but we're eating pizza now. We're eating pizza during the show, and that's the beauty of doing a show at Roberta's. So, right when we left off, Kara was waving her creativity-filled lesbian flag.
That was a good stopping point.
It was a great stopping point.
Holy crap.
Especially given the fact that you are the runaway star of this Vice Munchies article.
Oh, my God. There's so many great women who should have been in that, though. Holy cow.
You know, I was surprised, actually, at, like, the small number, because I think that community is just so strong and much larger than what was even portrayed in the article.
Oh, my God, yes. I read it, and I was like, whoa, why am I so important in here? This is ridiculous.
No, it was really, really great. And I'm curious, you know, your experience is so unique in that you really have been on mostly a cheese track since you were, you know, of working age.
19. Wild. I jumped in at 19.
Wow.
Oh, my God. anyway.
That's pretty nuts. That's
I could not drink when I was on the... Well, I could, but, like, on the low. Yeah.
But, so here's my question, and I don't know, maybe it's not the right question because your background is so sort of cheese-filled, but I was curious, like, in your bouts of time away from cheese, did you find, like, when you stepped away those couple of times as you've grown in your career, did you find that that gave some perspective to how inclusive or supportive the cheese community was?
Oh, yeah. Really? Actually, that's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, I saw in the wine business in the 2 years I did at Sutton Place, it was mostly men. In the wine industry is mostly men.
Yeah.
There was a few ladies I would see doing the jobs, but it wasn't like, I don't know, the industry folk that I met through cheese, it was a lot of strong women.
Yeah. And then a lot of levels too.
Yeah. And then the cheesemongers and then just seeing them in educational ways as well and wholesale programs, I think management. Yeah, I was like, oh, I can connect with these people.
There's a big female dominant sort of presence.
And I guess it just all kind of, it made me comfortable enough to to be myself. And I don't think that's true of every industry, you know.
Right. I'm certainly sure not of every workplace. I mean,
as people are evolving, they hear the whispers, as Oprah says, right? Like where they should be.
Right.
And I think for me, like, again, I was ready to leave cheese. But then there was a point where when I was doing the TV radio that I was like, okay, I gave up the wine thing. And I was like, okay, well, I need to make money again. I'm good at cheese. I like cheese. I kind of miss it. Mm. Let me go back to this thing.
And did you go back while you were still in school?
That's what I did. So I went to Green Grape Provisions just to be a monger. Okay. I said, I will never be a buyer here.
Oh, classic.
I will never be a manager here. I only want to serve the cheese. I want to be part-time. I want to be carefree. I know nothing about anything else but to just serve a piece of cheese.
And how long did your stint then there last?
I think it was like 4 or 5 months. Until I got into full-fledged. Until somebody... And it was a really crazy thing. One person left and it was given to another person because I don't want responsibility. I didn't want that responsibility.
Right.
And it was given to another person who actually owns a cheese shop, Anaïs, who's an amazing woman who owns a cheese shop in Pittsburgh, Chantal.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Super cool place. And she took the gig, but then she had a family situation. She had to leave. So then they were like, well, you're the last guy left here. And this other guy was definitely not going to do it. He was like DJing at night. So I guess it was me.
It was you.
And yeah, and then I stayed on at Green Grape for like 3+ years and loved every day there. I genuinely, it was like the funnest job for me.
Yeah, you were really in your element in that setting. You know, you, and it's interesting, you know, we talked about your experience at Choice Green. I would say Green Grape, a little less European, a little more of an American concept, but just as neighborhoody, if not more.
Oh, super neighborhoody.
And much higher volume.
Oh my God. And that's what I love. So it was like, I could, I had all the autonomy and could curate anything I wanted in the case. It could be any price point, any level. But for me, I mean, I go low to high. It's more just what makes the best cheese case, in my opinion. I wasn't doing just artisanal American. I had the classic Europeans and artisanal American, and it just was a great balance of everything.
Yeah.
And it was great because it was a full educational program for the mongers that then got to work under me and who are still working in cheese or have at least taken the passion for it with them. So yeah, that was great. The only thing I think that made me get out of there was, I needed to get out of retail to have
a life,
that life, you know, to grow to the next level. And, I literally told two people on the low, like, hey, I'm thinking about switching the game. 2 days later.
Wow.
I got a call from eSigni.
Wow.
Yeah. I was not on the market very long. I was the weirdest, craziest thing.
I remember that it was very abrupt. Not abrupt, but like, just that you got snatched up quick.
It was a quick snatch. Yeah. I was, oh, okay.
So back to that idea of like choosing life or whatever.
Yes.
Would you say it was more of a time choice, effort, money? Like what was the biggest factor in that shift for you? And, or, you know, at that point you had, if you had been in these supportive communities, had kind of come into your own, had sort of, you know, in the article you mentioned that you had sort of considered yourself bi in the beginning of your cheese time, but then as you got more comfortable with yourself, had sort of shed that.
Yeah.
So that's what true. Were the, you know, were these all factors in that moment of leaving
retail? I will say Green Grape Provisions, if anyone has been there, they'll notice it right away. It is probably, it should be like in California. It is the queerest freaking place to walk into. It's like a Trader Joe's. There's like trans people. There's
awesome.
There's like every type of gay person there. And it's amazing. And,
yeah.
And so it's very well balanced in that way. Hmm.
Was it that way when you were there?
Yeah.
And did you feel like, was that like the place where you kind of really settled in?
I think it was the first time where I was like, I'm going to hang out in Brooklyn. I'm not going to the city as much to meet people, and or I will go to Cubbyhole because that's like the only watering hole for lesbians in New York City. But
I mean, next career, open another one.
You know how well it would do? Yeah. Insane. R.I.P. Caddyshack, you know? R.I.P.
R.I.P.
But
if I could do a funeral dirge, I would do.
Yeah, you need organ music. Back to what we were saying. I'm sorry. Okay. I got off the beat.
So inclusive.
Yeah.
A rainbow staff at Green Grape.
Right, right. So yeah. Oh, so like, yeah, that made me feel like I can be myself. And I think that was, it sort of helped me evolve in that way to seeing the Brooklyn, the hipster Brooklyn, and getting out to that stuff into the gay world and feeling more myself. But the cheese world also was evolving. I mean, now as 30 something, you know, most of my friends are women or gay women. And a big chunk of them work in cheese.
Right. Totally.
So it's kind of like where your friends fall, you kind of follow.
Totally.
You know? I mean.
Yeah. And it's such a supportive community, too. I mean, the fact that you got that phone call 2 days after putting sort of whispering out in the world that you wanted to make a change.
But I will say, eSigni Sans Mer is the polar opposite of that. It is a fantastic. eSigni USA is a fantastic company. And. Normandy, but if you look at the demographics of eSigni in Normandy, it is mostly men.
Well, very traditionally, you know, traditional French, old school kind of like history in the company.
There's
and
no
the
TGV out there. It's like the random, it's like a Vermont, Wisconsin of France. It's a marshland with a lot of Norman cows. And
so not much change coming to Normandy.
No, I mean, when you're looking for that fun time out, it's a quiet land. So I make the best of it. Yeah. I roll some Mimolette around, you know. So, but then I was happily surprised. I had an idea, and this is where eSigni and My boss, Benoit, and Tom, the marketing guy, are amazing. I said, why don't we do a tote bag for Gay Pride? Because there was a fancy food show timing.
Yeah, where it was right. It was like the same weekend or something.
You know, it's like the curse of all curses with the fancy food show. Like Gay Pride and fancy food are at the same time. But they finally changed it the last few years. So yay. That's good. Yep. Yay, gay people. We have it.
Yeah, you can have your own weekend.
I mean, how much of that industry is that? And then we can't go. It's like a big tease.
It's like worse. It's like something worse than a tease. It's just heartbreaking.
It's funny. I think of it in a comedic way. But anyway, the tote bag was outstanding. It had the Signy logo with a rainbow flag behind it. And it said, we have pride in our cheesemakers.
Awesome.
And I was like, wow, they took my idea and they did this. And it was a prideful thing. Mm. And again, this is a traditional Normandy dairy cooperative.
Right.
Like, whoa, okay. This so is cool. Great. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, you're taking that sort of spirit of like, let's just be ourselves and bringing it, you know, overseas now.
So I think it's a combination of like being embraced for who I am by my work.
Huge.
Having women and cheese as a solid foundation. Whenever I felt a little bit off and then went to a women and cheese, I was like, my confidence is back. This is great.
Oh, that's so nice.
You know, like
listeners, Women and Cheese has been an unofficial organization that I have also unofficially organized for the last, I think it's 5 years, but for some reason I don't know specifically.
It goes in a flash.
I know.
So,
And it's just a casual gathering of women. That's what it has been here in New York in the cheese industry.
But like the inside power players of cheese, which I really like. I'm we can really commiserate, but also be like, hey, are you doing this? What are you doing?
Yeah, let's work on this together.
Like, I got a deal for you. What do you want to do? Anyway.
Yeah. And having groups like that, I think for any identity group, it's just huge to be able to connect with people who are on the same, you know, sort of experiencing the same stuff on some level or with some topic.
Exactly. I mean, I think when I've been to Vermont and I've met women cheesemakers, I mean, that's a whole other segue too. The women cheesemakers, the young women cheesemakers, the older, everyone. It's like, you know, Sam Frank introduced me to that whole group there. And now I think Kate's Orbweaver, is that who? Mm-hmm. I mean, the nicest people. And just, you can see they're like changing the world and it's kind of inspiring. That's why I'm in this business. Like it's, people are doing some pretty cool stuff, you know?
Totally.
But yeah, no, that was, it's funny. Back to the Vice thing and eSigni. The week I had, this was like a crazy week.
Yeah.
I was like, what happened there?
A lot of excitement.
When it rains, it pours, you know? I was like, no way, wait, what?
On the day of the event, of the Threes Brewing event, the article comes out.
Yeah.
That's great. So here's a question. At this point in your career, you've jumped over to sales role, you know, regional sales role, East Coast sales.
With a bit of the Midwest in the twist.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A little dabbling in the Midwest.
A little Midwest twist. Yeah.
Do you see, you know, one thing that I think is really interesting is like you being a born and bred New Yorker, Brooklyn, you know, the city, like the back of your hand, you know, like you understand the context, not just the right now, but also the context in which New York exists. And I think that's so unique.
Yes.
Now that you're out there and like traveling more and seeing the cheese industry in these different regions, have you noticed, is the spirit of inclusiveness, of supportive, you know, environments, is it blanket, you know, awesome? Are there types of shops and types of businesses where you see a better environment than others? Like what's your take on?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some places that I have been surprised and I'm like, this is an amazing store. I wish there was one of these. Mm. I went to Marblehead, Massachusetts and I found Shoebies.
Shoebies.
Have you ever heard of Shoebies?
I have never been to Shoebies.
Shoebies is freaking awesome.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And listeners, we'll do a little link in our show notes on Shoebies so you can check it out.
Yeah. I love that place. And
what do you love about it?
It's a neighborhood place with very high quality everything. Mm. They have wine, beer, everything. It's family owned. They recommend the greatest places to you to go to around the town. Mm. But like, it's just, everything has intent for being there. And you just...
Intentional. That's a great...
You know, it's aspect. Not... and the food is delicious. It's just very... And it's very clean. Mm. You know, there's so many places now that I go to that are for mass appeal.
Right.
And I think they have a purpose and I get it and they're doing a great job. But you know, sometimes when you get a specialty store that's really like on point.
Yeah, it's so refreshing.
It feels good. It just, you feel, you walk in and you're like, oh my God, this is the thing I would have loved to have created.
Right.
You know, like once in a while you get one of those and you're like, okay. But I mean, yeah, every town has a different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people are not. So in New York, you know, it's a little more, you speak pretty forward to people.
Yes.
I think Boston has the same feel, but it's also a little bit different. It's like it's a variation of it, you know? Mm. So, I mean, I guess there's all these, I mean, sales rep and on the road, there's a funny way about it in the cheese industry. Mm-hmm. And I think once you get into it, you love it or hate it, but there's a feeling to it that I just can't describe. And I mean, maybe on the low, we can all have these conversations. Maybe it's not meant for radio. No. That's all.
I'll leave that at that.
Yes.
Okay. I can't believe it, but we're getting near the end of our show time here. I have two final questions for you.
Oh my God, no.
I know. I can't believe it. Okay. First question. This is sort of a question I've started asking most guests, just because I feel like even for well-seasoned cheese professionals, it's always great to hear advice. Like, you're never too old, you're never too ingrained in a community to be open-minded about advice. So, what advice would you give for folks who are new to the cheese scene or who have been around and maybe reaching that burnout point? And, you know, queer community or otherwise?
Yeah. I think number one, go to a group meetup like Women in Cheese.
Mm-hmm. Or start your own
chapter.
If there's not one near you.
It's very refreshing. You're not alone. You're not weird.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of purpose to what you're doing. And maybe you're not making the money right now, but you can grow into it. And when you follow your passion, as Oprah says, I think.
The second Oprah reference of the show, which I'm loving.
I think the more
Oprah references.
She's doing all right.
Yeah.
You know, if you follow your passion, it's going to work out. Mm. So I say stick to it. And then always read the cheese books. Like, I was reading one the other day to go over some facts that I like wasn't sure about.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, that never gets old. And I think it's like, even when you've been in it, I mean, I've written a cheese book and I still consult cheese books a lot.
Oh my God.
And when I KonMari'd my book collection, no cheese books left the home.
Good.
So I do think I'm big on that.
I am surprised about that because I thought Elena cleaned her entire house out. So bravo.
I basically did, except for cheese books.
Bravo.
And beer and wine. I have a reference library. You really
do need to find those facts. And it's funny because I think online everything is kind of not organized properly, or you don't see who it was written by, or it was copy pasted by some other odd article.
Or it's just wrong.
Or it's a poor translation from some language and it just never got corrected, which is unfortunately the case in a lot of cheese writing online.
It's
so
true.
Look to the old master books and...
Totally. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that's the best advice. And then commiserate or celebrate with other cheesemongers.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, final question.
Sure.
Let's say you have a less adventurous, cheese shy, we could say, cheese shy friend or family member.
Ah, okay.
What cheese would you recommend that they try to get a little bit out of their comfort zone?
To get out of their comfort
zone? Just a little bit. Just enough.
Oh, Can I say one of my cheeses?
Of course.
Because I'm really proud of it, actually. The Isigny Camembert is really great.
Uh-huh.
It has a geotrichum mold. You tried
it
the other day.
It's got a lot of flavor. I mean, there's a lot going on.
It's a new twist on the Camembert in that it's actually going for this authentic cheesy thing. It's not a mass-produced thing. So it's the geotrichum nutty yeasty flavors with a little bit of the lactic going on.
Mm-hmm. And then you get a little bit of that sort of vegetal cabbagey note.
Right.
It's great. It was a great cheese. And what did you pair with that? What beer was with the Camembert?
That was with the Transmitter Hibiscus wheat beer.
Hibiscus wheat. And that wheat beer is like wheat, major on the wheat.
Yes.
Which went super well with the geotrichum, I thought.
Yeah. So I think, again, like someone who's just kind of nestling into cheese would need like a slight funk. Like if you give them a whiff, they'd be like, oh my God, no. But then if they eat it, it's, you know, milder and delicious.
Totally.
Yeah.
Great suggestion.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, Kara, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome. I love this.
This was really fun. And now, listeners, we're going to go finish our pizza here. Listeners, we do hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please keep the conversation going with feedback, impressions, and ideas. You can reach us on Twitter and Instagram at Cutting the Curd, or shoot us an email at cuttingthecurd@heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.